He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz, Julian Council, producing intern Preston, interning Marshall, hanging out with us because we are at the Jack Daniels Burrow House at the Bridgestone Arena. Beardstone, it is game four tonight, going for the sweep for the first time in franchise history. And let's just be honest, other than the Oracle, none of us called it. But it's where we are, and it's a huge opportunity. They had the extra day off. Everybody gets to regroup, and now we can start getting ready to party at Bridgestone.
No, but for all intents and purposes, nobody picked this anywhere in the world. So, right. And in fact, it might cost Jared Stillman doing something stupid on a pedestrian bridge to do it, which I'm very excited about. But I agree, it's an exciting day. It's an exciting time. I think the sweep is way more important than people think. I think if you don't win tonight and it gets back to Chicago, I think they would win Game 5. And then you're putting pressure on yourself to win Game 6 at home to put the series away to avoid going back to Chicago. I know that's a lot of dominoes that have to fall, but I really do think it's incredibly important that the Predators win tonight and put the Blackhawks away. Joel Quenneville has been very, very good in elimination games. Chicago has been very, very good at extending series as is. Under Joel Quenneville, I think 13-5 when facing elimination. That's really good. And I think that winning tonight is significantly more important than I think most fans. Because I think most fans look at a 3-0 lead and go, all right, we're going to win it at some point. We're going to get it done. We got four chances. It doesn't matter. We're probably going to get it done. I'm not worried about it. I would not take that approach against a team like the Blackhawks because they are they're the very few teams that could actually make this crazy comeback. It's extremely unlikely. But would you put anything past the team that's won three cups in 7 years? No, you don't. So that means focus needs to be exactly the same. Energy levels need to be exactly the same. I think Bridgestone's going to be exactly the same. It might even be more lit. Can you be litter?
I think you can.
Can you be litter?
You can be litter.
It would be litter tonight, I think, than even Monday night, which was an absurdly awesome atmosphere. So I cannot stress enough how important I think Game 4 is tonight for this franchise.
The term you're looking for is more so turnt. The next level of turnt.
Turnt?
Yeah, no. So the next level of turnt is skurnt. So,
skurnt.
Yeah.
Skurnt?
Skurnt.
Skurnt.
Yeah.
Can you give me, what's the derivation of that? Like, what's the, where does, I get turnt, like turned up, but I don't want to use like the real proper English because that would not be cool. So you have to call it turnt. I get that. Where does skurnt come from?
I don't know. I just know that's the next level.
I feel like that's something like you go over to Europe for a month and everyone's like, how was it? It was great, but I got skurnt while I was there. And
I took a boat from New York to Great Britain and I got skurnt.
Skurnt. Yeah, I got skurnt. You know what? Here's the thing. I agree with you that they want to come out and finish it off. I agree with you that Bridgestone is going to be skurnt, as we've now learned, and I think that the entire environment is going
to
be...
Can we double check that just to make sure Julian's not just completely lying to us to make us look even worse than we already normally do?
Check the Urban Dictionary.
Urban Dictionary, okay.
Yeah, check it.
So I agree with you on all of those things, but I'm not really concerned about it. I mean, at this point, again, I think the Preds have been throughout this series by far the better team, so whether they win the series tonight or they win it, you know, Game 5 or Game 6 or Game 7. I'm with most fans. You got one chance and only four teams in history have ever come down from 3-0. So can it be done? Yeah, sure, sure.
I've just checked skurnt in the Urban Dictionary. I'm not sure I could describe this, and I don't think it has anything to do with being really excited or lit.
Did well, you spell it right?
Maybe not. Didn't. It's very possible I did not spell it right.
Oh,
S-C-U-R-N-T.
No,
skurnt.
No.
Okay. How do you spell skirt?
S-K-U-R-N-T.
Oh, S-K-U-R-N-T.
Obviously.
Oh, because the K, of course.
Skirt.
One level beyond turnt. This is the Urban Dictionary definition. One level beyond turnt.
Do they ever print
can
that
be
Urban
used
Dictionary?
To denote inebriation of nearly any kind.
Wow.
So your D-runk is actually the
skirt.
Kid's skirt.
Wow. Oh, you know what? I'm going to have to bring that into my vernacular at this point.
Yeah.
Yes. Do they ever print, like, you get the Webster's Dictionary? Do you ever, like...
It's colloquial.
You pull that out, and then you're like, hey, I've also got the Urban Dictionary. Should we need that? Like, when you're playing Scrabble? And-
so, having worked at a magazine company where, like, stylistically, journalistically, I wasn't one of them, but my bosses and editors, very, very... It's a bizarre how very specific you follow every rule, AP style or MLA style or whatever it is. It's extremely important that you follow all those rules. As I learned over 12 years working at Athlon Sports, I don't believe that the Urban Dictionary was ever one of the stylistic books that were allowed to be used to put together professional magazines.
I now know what I need to spend my afternoon changing then. So yes. we're going to get that. So it's going to be skirt, and Lower Broad is going to be skirt afterwards. And I look, I don't think that there's you can take any opponent lightly, and I think that the players and coaches are all saying the right things and will continue to say the right things. And I think that everybody has the right mindset. You obviously want to come in and finish them. Joe Quenneville, 13-5 when facing elimination. But as long as the second number there gets to 6, I don't care whether he's 13-6 or whether he's 15-6. As long as it gets to 6, that's all I care about.
I agree, but can you feel the tension in a game 6 here? Like, the tension of a game 6 would be astronomical because it means they would have won 2 in a row, Chicago, and it means the pressure was you don't want to send it back to Chicago to give them a one-game opportunity to win the whole thing. So what it does is it puts – it doesn't mean they wouldn't come back and win game 6. So like
right.
It could very easily happen. But you don't – game 5 feels like an automatic W for Chicago. If you go back to the United Center –
I don't go that far because they won so well – they played so well at the United Center, and they won 2 games 2 different ways. So I just think the glory – like the most exciting – like for me, it's not about the pressure of tonight or the you've got to win tonight. It's about the opportunity of tonight when you come in and say, holy cow, you can finish the sweep off and win the series at home. Like winning a playoff series at home is just awesome. Like that's sort of the moment because everybody will celebrate. I mean, how long will the building stay packed post-game if the Preds pull off the sweep? I mean, how long is everybody just going to sit here – that ovation will last forever, and that's what I'm excited about tonight. Like, unless,
and I think it's a statement. I mean, I think it's a statement about the franchise. It's a coming of age. It's all the cheesy sports cliches that we talk about with this franchise, the growth and the maturation and getting over the hump, and you know all the same stuff that we say. I think it's a statement to the rest of the league, to the rest of the NHL. Why are we seeing articles about Victor Arvidsson everywhere? Why are we seeing articles about the Jofa line everywhere? Why are we seeing articles about the talent level and the defensemen, and this is all this stuff that's now coming out in the national scope that are finally starting to realize the things that we've known sort of all season. Again, some of that is their own fault because they didn't play consistent high-level hockey all year. They just sort of showed us glimpses of it. But Pekka Rinne was sort of, and we'll talk with David Kaplan. Again, we're going to have him back on the show. He came on at the start of the series last week, and he said, listen, we have a tremendous amount of respect for Pekka Rinne. I don't think they knew much else about the team, really, to be honest with you, or maybe respected much else about the team. So I think a 4-0 sweep is a statement that this franchise has sort of, and I don't want to say arrived because they've been a postseason player for many years, but this is a different feel,
no,
a different vibe.
It's a new step, and I think that's the one thing. Because, you know, it's interesting. When we had the conversation at the beginning of the playoffs about what left everybody with all the good feels this year, and I think we all agreed that a first-round playoff loss would leave the fan base frustrated because the consensus was that we were going to be better this year. And then there was some conversation about how much of that can be erased by a win over Chicago. Well, that is compounded when you say how much can – I mean, how much is that erased by a sweep of Chicago? I mean, you're not just talking about a win in this case. You're talking about a sweep of Chicago. I think that's a total different thing when you talk about the beast, of perception and where everybody feels about this team moving forward.
It'll be very interesting to see. And I agree. I think there's more of a, to quote the Boondock Saints, it's symbology. The symbology of this evening, I think is really important for this franchise and for this team. And symbolism, I believe, of course, is the word that I was looking for. I think it means more from that standpoint. I also think it means a lot and maybe I'm just more cautious than you are when it comes to this. I think, you know, being in the locker room yesterday, talking to the coaching staff and the players, that it is all business. It is like the fans are the ones who get out of control and say, oh, it's season, series is over. You know, occasionally, maybe one member of Braden and Fitz is to the point where it's, oh, the series is over. It ain't over until you put them away. And again, if they were playing Calgary or Edmonton or, you know, it wouldn't, I would feel like you feel, Fitzy. This is the one seed. This is the premier franchise in the Western Conference. This is the team that's got a bunch of Hall of Famers and champions on it. You cannot take that for granted. You've got to put them away.
Yeah, and we're going to continue this conversation, obviously, throughout the day. We're going to talk next a little bit about the top line. You mentioned them a second ago, Jofa, and all that they've done against Taves and really the Blackhawks. But I think we found some of the stats that sort of support where this is coming from and how it's gotten here. We'll tell you what those are next up on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Julian Council producing. And everybody's out there trying to find their brooms because we're going for a sweep tonight, obviously. And
The Oracle will pick Chicago?
Well, you know, I don't want to give that away because so many people want to hear what the Oracle has to say. Mm. Oracle, is there official time for your pick today?
9:53 Central Standard Time.
9:53. And you found, Braden, some interesting stats we want to break down, but this sort of show where this series is gone. But first, Adam wants to chime in. Adam, man, thanks for hanging on, man. What do you got? Adam, we got you, buddy.
Hello, Adam. Going once. Oh. Going twice. He had a great question.
Okay, so Adam.
No, we don't have an answer for that
question. We don't have an answer. But we're not afraid to bring you on even when we don't know the answer to the question. So Adam, I think, wanted to ask if an 8 has ever swept a 1 in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And we spent the whole break instead of, you know, just talking and dancing. We spent the whole break trying to research the answer to that.
Generally, dancing is a much more efficient use of our time, gets us better prepared for the next segment, mm-hmm. so on and so forth.
How we keep the energy.
But instead, I looked up statistical data, and it looks like the ones – his question was, has a 1 seed ever been swept by an 8? And I would assume that it has happened because I think this would be a bigger story nationally if that was the first time in NHL history this was going to happen. 10 times has an 8 seed beat a 1 out of 42 chances. So 32 and 10, the 1 seed, which if you think about it compared to the NBA, I would love to check the NBA records on the 8 seed versus the 1 seed. I bet you it ain't 32 and 10. I bet you it's like 38
All right,
and
right.
4. You know what I mean? I bet you the ratio is significantly higher for the 1 seed in the NBA. Of course, this year's Celtics and Bulls notwithstanding. But 32 and 10 is your 1 seed's record in series against 8 seeds. And in theory, that's what this is. This is a 1 versus an 8. Now, it's not really, so we don't really, you know, the statistics aren't necessarily matching up. So Jeremy Gover just texted me, by the way. This is why we hang out with Jeremy Gover so much. Not since 1987, which I guess is the best of 7, that it's ever happened. Is that I'll need Jeremy to
confirm that.
Qualify and confirm that statement. But 1987 is it's never happened. That would be an amazing statistic, I guess, if that actually takes place and is actually true.
Well, and
as we workshop our statistical data live on the radio,
that's we're going to keep diving into it. We will try and find the answer. Here's what we know. We don't know whether it's ever happened, but we do know it doesn't happen very often. So either way, it's sort of the moment. And I think that part of when you continue to look at it, I think part of what makes this special is that they're going for the sweep here. Like, that's what I can't stress enough. I think it's going to be amazing because this crowd is going to be epic for this moment, and it's going to get the guys fired up. Now, interestingly, when you came in this morning, you had some really cool sort of stats that most people would be surprised by that show sort of where the contributions have come from and how we've gotten here in this process.
Yeah, I think the number one piece for me that I think that has stood out and is clearly something that and I was sitting there with Stu Grimson yesterday talking about what his keys to the game have been and how good Ryan Johansson has been and the Jofa line versus the Taves line and sort of Ryan Johansson versus Jonathan Taves. And clearly one guy has gotten the better of that matchup. Ryan Johansson has been arguably the best player on the ice for either team. And Jonathan Taves has been largely, you know, not irrelevant, but just, he's been invisible for most of the series. He has not been a huge factor. And Kane got the power play goal, of course, in the second period in Game 3. But basically, Taves has been, you know, that's one major storyline, if not the top storyline, is how the Jofa line has sort of emerged as a national story against Jonathan Taves, a three-time Stanley Cup champion captain. So I think that was one. But with that, because they've been so good, they've combined for 4 goals, they've combined for 7 assists, they you know, they've got a combined plus minus of like 13. I mean, they basically have dominated the series.
And puck possession is over 60%.
And puck possession is huge. So, but with that, because they've been so dominant, you look down the score sheet and to see, we talked a lot about the unsung heroes of Game 2. Roman Josi, no goals, 1 assist. PK Subban, no goals, 1 assist. James Neal, no goals, 1 assist. Mike Fisher, no goals, no assists. A combined 0 goals between your captain, Roman Josi, arguably your best defenseman, P.K. Subban, your biggest star, and James Neal, which would have been considered your top sniper 2 years ago. So you look at those four, and it's not that they aren't impacting the game. They're playing a ton of minutes. They're playing physical hockey. P.K. Subban's been spectacular. James Neal's been great. It doesn't mean that they're not playing good games. It means statistically they haven't needed to produce, and I think that's a huge statement on this team, is that you can look around and you can go, no goals for James Neal, no goals for Mike Fisher, no real production statistically from Roman Josi or P.K. Subban or Matias Ekholm, for that matter. Not that he's a big stats guy, but, you know, Craig Smith hasn't scored. Cali Yarncroke hasn't scored. Colin Wilson hasn't played. And you look at these numbers and you go, obviously Jofa's been great, but they haven't needed goals and assists production, statistical production, from three or four of their biggest stars, and they're still up 3-0.
I think, too, it's sort of says a lot about what's being asked of guys in different situations, because we've talked a lot about how I think part of the reason there's been a different production level, let's say from PK and guys like that, is that there's been a little bit of a different strategy for them. It seems like there's a portion of our roster that's out there specifically for the purpose of neutralization, and then there's a portion of our roster that's out there to get points. And what's amazing to me is that, as you said, our stars, our Jofa line, if you want to take our best line against their best line in this series, flat out better. And then when you take that third, fourth line, when you take that lower portion of the roster, we've got a lot of guys there that are talented and fast and capable, and that portion of the roster, flat out better. So when you've got the top and the bottom of the roster flat out better, and the middle of the roster, you know, upper third, lower third, doing a good job of neutralization, that leads to victory. I mean, that screams to the depth. That screams again. You know, that screams to David Poile and the construction of this roster. That screams to, you know, the coaching and getting the right guys on the ice at the right time. And that just screams to the fact that this matchup favors the Preds, and that's what none of us saw coming.
But you start, and I think neutralization is a great word for it, because that is Roman Josi and P.K. Subban's job, essentially, in this series in particular, where you're going up against a speed offensive team. You want guys, like P.K. Subban played 34 minutes, Roman Josi played 31 minutes. Josi played 28 minutes in game one, which is a huge number for a 60-minute non-overtime game. So it's not like these guys aren't on the ice producing. They're just doing it in different ways. You look at Roman Josi leading the team right now with 10 block shots through three games. P.K. Subban, 10 hits, which is something we wanted to see out of him, was a little bit more physical play from him, and he's been great in that category. So it's not about how many goals and assists you guys got. It's not about that for those guys. And Mike Fisher, you know, same thing, physical. He's been physical. In game one, he blocked four or five shots in game one, which was, I mean, he was in every single passing lane. He was in disrupting every shot. Like, it's not like they're not playing a great role, but it's a neutralization role rather than a statistical production role. And for guys like P.K. Subban and Roman Josi, who do produce big numbers, James Neal is a goal scorer, those guys, for them not to even be involved in that part of the game, and for this team to be up 3-0, I think speaks volumes to the way that the entire roster has played. And it gives you great hope that if they were to advance, that you know James Neal's going to come around and score. You know P.K. Subban's going to come around and produce statistically. You know that the same thing's going to happen for Roman Josi. So I think with the way the numbers have played out in the first series, to end up with a series win, even the way that some of those numbers have fallen, I think gives you a lot of excitement about the next round.
Well, and to go on with Mike Fisher again, he's taken two shots in the whole series.
That's crazy.
I mean, that just shows you that's not what they're asking.
Where's his
to
focus?
Do. You
know, like the other side of the ice.
he's blocking shots. He's not taking shots, and that's sort of an alarming stat to me when you look at it. It tells you a lot about it tells you a lot about where this team is going strategically, like where they are looking to be, and the way that the game plan has been structured. I mean, that's sort of what it all comes back to for me in the process. Man Card, Matt, you want to chime in? What do you got, bud?
Hey, fellas, how are we today?
Oh, we're good, well, man. Thanks for calling.
I got two real quick questions for you. One, when our Predators sweep this, what do you think their odds are of going all the way to the Stanley Cup and winning? And second, Pekka, you think he's going to be able to stay in goal all the way through the series? You think they're going to have to give him a rest at some point in time?
Matt, thanks for the call, man. No, I think Pekka's in for the long haul,
yeah, I agree.
And as long as they keep the real estate in front of him clean like they've been doing throughout the rest of the series, through the beginning of the series, He's had a – not only has he played great, but he's been able to play great because the guys in front of him have also played great. And as far as they can go, I don't see anybody in the West that scares me more than Chicago does. So I can't look at this team after – if they sweep the Blackhawks, I can't look at them and see why they wouldn't, in my mind, be able to play their way into the finals. I don't think that they're better than Pittsburgh, but it's amazing to say, but I think they could.
It's very weird to feel like your first-round series will be your most difficult, your second-round series will be your second most difficult because St. Louis is playing so well, and that your third-round series could be your easiest. Like
right.
That feels very weird for it to almost get progressively easier. Now, that could be told. I mean, you say stuff like that, and then San Jose beats you or Anaheim beats you or whatever.
Well, in Anaheim, everybody has talked about how Anaheim would look like a totally different series because it's a different style of play. So it's going to be interesting series to series how they adjust.
And by the way, they're in. They've already advanced. They're up four. They won the series against Calgary last night, and they're in. By the way, I guess the number is that no 8 seed has ever swept a 1 seed in the NHL playoffs in the first round. So 1987, I believe, is when they went to that format. I checked on the NBA, and Julian, you're saying that 5 NBA teams have beaten, as an 8 seed, have beaten a 1 seed. The current 16-team format started in 1984, but a lot of those were best-of-5 series. So it's a lot easier to get 3 out of 5 than it is 4 out of 7. And in 2003 was when the first round was expanded to 7 games. So I'm guessing since 1984, that's a lot of 1 seeds. The ratio is much, much higher in the NBA as far as 1 seeds winning. In the NHL, a lot more 8 seeds tend to win.
So it's amazing. What we've discovered, because you guys are the best listeners everywhere, is that not only is this a historic night for the franchise, but it can be a historic night for the NHL. We'll let you hear from one of the stars of the team, Ryan Ellis. Braden had the chance to sit down and talk to him. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5, The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. You can get to us on Twitter at Braden Gall, at Jason Fitz. It's Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5, The Game. You can also get to our producer, Julian, the Oracle Council, at Julian Council. We've discovered this morning it's not just a day for franchise history, it's a day for NHL history, as the Preds are going for the sweep. They're going for the 4-0 sweep over Chicago, and as far as we can tell from all the information we've been given, that's never happened, and 8 has never swept a 1 in the NHL playoffs. So only adding to sort of the gravitas of the evening and what this game can mean. And so, Braden.
The gravity of the evening or the gravitas?
No, we're going to go gravitas. Both? Gravitas.
Okay.
We're going to go gravitas.
Right.
It feels cooler.
Okay.
Right? That's
it does feel cooler.
It feels
no question about that.
It feels cooler. That's where I'm going to go. And so, Braden, you had the chance yesterday to hang out with some of the guys in the locker room, right?
Yeah, I talked to a few of the guys and had a chance to catch up with Ryan Ellis. And obviously you got to ask him about the beard. And I you will find out who has the worst beard in the locker room.
Oh, nice.
You will
nice.
Find out that as he called somebody out. But it was interesting because I think everybody sort of still, and as you'd expect, everybody's still very much focused and there's not a lot of happy faces and not a lot of, it's not this celebratory moment yet because they're not there yet. There's no exhaling at all, and I think that's what you want to see out of a team that's in a very critical sort of career franchise defining moment like this. I think you want to see extreme levels of focus, but you want to see looseness as well. So it's kind of a fun balance. The two things I noticed before and during practice: Colin Wilson not on the sheet of ice, if you will, yesterday. So I think at this point, feeling like you're up 3-0, there's no real reason to rush him back, I think, is sort of the consensus around the locker room, and that they expect him to be back pretty soon, and that and in the second series, that's probably going to be the case. Also, Craig Smith gave it a go. He got out there a little bit on the ice and did not stay on the ice for the entire time, so left the game late in overtime with what appeared to be an ankle or a lower body issue. So those are kind of your two updates from practice from yesterday. I did have a chance to catch up with Robin Josi after practice, though, yesterday. Ryan Ellis in the locker room yesterday after practice.
Ryan, at Monday night, obviously pretty awesome atmosphere, and you've been playing at Bridgestone for a while. Is there any difference in the postseason and how that affects the team in the locker room?
The fans were amazing. They were so loud, so energetic, and we knew we just had to get a goal to get them fired up, and they were doing a great job to pump us up, and especially off the beginning there, in the start of the first, we were feeding off that energy, and I thought we played a pretty good first, and the whole game, I thought we played pretty good, and we're going to have to be even better because we'll see their best.
How does it feel when you look back on three games of tape and you see sort of three different ways your team has played and victory in all three different styles?
Yeah, it's good to see. I think at the end of the day, all you want to see is the victory part. No matter how we get it done, if we win the game, we're happy. There's no extra points. There's no, 2 points or whatever. There's no kind of thing like that. It's all about just winning the game and going on to the next day. So tomorrow it's going to be a fight to the end.
Is there any difference at all when you know you're facing a situation where you can eliminate somebody, or is it just making sure you're doing exactly the same way?
Yeah, we've been happy with our game for the most part through the first three games, and we need to continue to do more of the same things. Take advantage of the opportunity we put ourselves in, and really go and get the game. But like I said, we're going to see their best, and we're going to have to be on it.
How has the personality of the locker room morphed and changed and evolved over the course of the season and into the postseason?
Not too many. Everyone kind of adds their 2 cents. It's a great locker room. Everyone gets along really well, and it's a lot of fun to be in here. And we've been handling things pretty good. I think we evolved our game more so from the beginning of the year till now, and guys are buying in, doing everything that they need to do to win, and we're seeing results for that.
Obviously the best beard in the locker room. Who's got the worst beard in the locker room?
Worst beard? Probably Salty.
I mean, he's the beard expert at this point.
Oh, yeah. He's the beard whisperer.
He's had a playoff beard since, game one of the regular season. So
I don't think you can prove that he hasn't had a playoff beard since Perth. I mean, I'm pretty sure he came out.
Came out poofed.
He came out.
By the way, yours is starting to come in. We're at 1 week. We're at 1 week and a day.
When did the playoffs start?
Last week, last Thursday.
Okay, but I forgot to shave a couple days before, so I'm a week and a half.
Okay, so basically a little over a week now, and I'm starting to see hair on your face.
There you go. You're welcome,
And it's going to turn red?
There's already some.
We need to tweet out some photos of the beards to this point. I need to know what Julian's face looks like. I haven't seen him since yesterday. It didn't look like there was any hair on his face yesterday either.
Julian, so. Are you not?
How's the beard going?
I'm going to shave as soon as possible.
Well, in June, it's
whenever I get a haircut, which will probably be either today or tomorrow, I'm going to shave.
Well, no, you're not allowed to shave.
I'm going to.
Okay. This is a major issue.
Sean Henry, take it up with him, not me.
Sean, you realize if the Predators win tomorrow and then you shave and they don't win the second, or they win tonight and then you shave tomorrow, and they don't win in the second round, you realize it's entirely your fault.
Look, I'm the Oracle. I already told you people before the series is going to be sweep. So what else do you want from me?
Just
facial hair.
To
facial
continue
hair.
Picking sweeps.
Julian beard.
If you shave after they win the series, you are the one that has caused the entire team to go down into the tank.
Look, I've got to shave for several different reasons that we will not discuss on this air.
Oh, boo. It's got to be boo. It's all about the boo.
Your boo is not important right now. The boo is secondary or tertiary, if you will.
Tertiary.
Oh,
we are bringing out all the
yes.
Woo!
There is nothing else in your life right now that is more important than the superstitions around this potential run to a Stanley Cup final.
Obviously,
there is nothing that could be more important than that. And by the way, I'm already getting to the point where it's itchy because it's hot out now, and I already hate having it. Marshall, by the way. Our esteemed engineer here, full on beard already.
Always.
Full on beard.
Always a full on beard. And look, I think Ellis it's interesting to hear him talk about the playoffs, and I get his point that, look, all of the wins count the same. I get that point, but I still think that there's some sort of moment that comes from knowing you can win no matter what the style of the game is. That they've proven throughout three games of the series, and it's part of why I feel so in tune with the result. I feel like the Oracle today. I feel like I know. I feel like I know. And I can't be the Oracle.
I'm not sure I'm a fan of all this overconfidence.
Well, it's we're embracing it. Dennis in Nashville wants to chime in. Dennis, what do you got, man?
Morning, guys.
Morning.
I listen to you every morning, me and my wife on the way to work. It's awesome.
Man, we appreciate that.
Had a question for you, though. I've seen throughout the season when things start firing on all cylinders and somebody comes back from injury, Laviolette tends to change things up. And I always find concern with that because once we find something that works, he turns around and he changes it up because somebody comes back. And do you think that Wilson coming back from injury, that Laviolette should implement him in the game plan, or should he leave it the way it is until something dynamically changes, like an injury, or we have a just devastating loss in which he needs to shake it up? I'm going to leave it where they're, right there for you.
Dennis, thanks for the call, man. Here's what I would say. The conspiracy theorist in me would say that they'd like, they, in a perfect world, they'd love for Colin Wilson to, air quote, not get healthy until the next series, because then you can finish out this series with what's working and you can sort of adjust the lineups accordingly to whoever you're playing in the next series. That's a really good reason to bring him back into the fold.
And I also think that if there's a good chance, and again, this is pure speculation on my part. I'm no doctor, and nor have I spoken with Colin Wilson or anyone else about this. My guess is that if this was game six or game seven, he'd be playing. If this was a more critical situation where there was more dire straits and elimination was being faced or all that stuff, that I think he would be out there giving it a go. But I think there's no reason to press it right now. And I think to your point, it's a much more easier transition when you sort of reset the game plan, reset the ideas and the concepts and the roster. I mean, I would expect to see some Cody. Like, if you go down to a series against St. Louis, I would expect to see all the guys that we didn't see in this series, whether it's Cody McLeod or P.A. Parenteau. I think you definitely expect to see Parenteau, I think, next series. So I think the lineups will look significantly different if it was a series against St. Louis or Anaheim, for that matter, moving on even further, which is certainly counting all of your Blackhawks and Ducks before they're hatched. But
but to answer your question, Dennis, no, I personally, I don't get paid a bunch of money to coach hockey, but I'm with you. Even if he was healthy, right now the way things are rolling, I'd keep it.
I agree with that as well.
So here's what you need to know, guys. Everybody knows I made the switch to Xfinity, and it's not just about the TV. It's also about the Wi-Fi. I use it a bunch. Obviously, I stream a lot of sports, and for all my musician buddies out there, you know how difficult it is to upload sessions. It takes forever, and it takes a ton of internet. And the best internet you can get comes from Xfinity. It's the best in-home Wi-Fi experience. That's because they have the fastest download speeds, the most of Wi-Fi coverage throughout your home. AT&T just does not keep up with it. Xfinity offers more speed to more homes than AT&T does. Plus, Xfinity has in-home fast Wi-Fi speeds in every room in your house, so you can watch favorite shows wherever you want. So the Wi-Fi claim based on Xfinity gigabyte service router coverage speed on a 5 gigahertz band. Here's an offer for you. If you're looking for the fastest internet and the best in-home Wi-Fi experience, don't put up with AT&T. Call 1-800-XFINITY or visit Xfinity.com to switch to Xfinity today for the internet experience you deserve. Coming up next, one of the coaches talked to Braden yesterday and told him about something that we think is a massive advantage tonight. We'll tell you what that is next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Julian Council producing. A ton of you guys on Twitter, by the way, have chimed in. And it's fantastic to see. I love the Heisman Trophy did give us an 8 seed, never swept a 1 seed. So thanks for the info that we got there. And Predators memes came in and said, might want to go ahead and mention an ad for a roofing company. If we sweep the Hawks tonight, the roof will blow off. That might be true. And John reminds us that it ain't over till Betty sings. Betty, start warming up. It's over. I'm
so
just saying.
Did they just call Betty fat?
No.
Did they just call Betty the fat lady?
No.
I think they just called Betty the fat lady.
Betty! John called you fat! So from Betty, I don't know where we go from here. So Braden yesterday, I got the chance to talk to Coach
Poor
Phil
Betty.
Housley. And Phil, this is awesome because it spurs a conversation about what we think is a big advantage. Check out Phil talking to Braden.
coach, obviously, you look at the tape for the three games heading into game four, and you look at the tape, and sort of each game a little different. When you look at that, is it important to see the way that your team has played in three different styles of games?
Yeah, I think it's really important, especially, you know, as you progress through the series here. I thought our first game was good. You know, we had to rely a little bit too much on goaltending. Our next game in Chicago was very, very solid, and we cashed in on our opportunities. And again, you know, with their backs against the wall going into that third period, guys found a way to win. I think we're just playing the right way, and we got to expect them to have a big game again like they had again in game three. So we have to be prepared for that.
Give us a little breakdown on the matchup between Ryan Johansson and Jonathan Toews. Obviously two really great players, but that's been a really fascinating matchup to kind of watch it go back and forth all series.
Well, Jonathan Toews is a world-class player. We all know that. And, you know, he's won cups. He's the Conn Smythe winner in the playoffs. So it's a tough matchup for Joey, but Joey's risen to the challenge. He's had to play, you know, stride for stride with him. And, you know, Jonathan Toews is a very, very strong player. Good, strong on his feet, good down low in the offensive zone. So he's done an amazing job just getting with good positioning on him and stick and trying to be physical. I mean, that's part of the game, and he's doing a great job in that area.
What has been the difference for your unit on the blue line there during the regular season? Kind of, you guys obviously dealt with some injuries and some new pieces coming in and getting used to each other, but it seems like they're playing at another level right now.
Well, I think it's just stability. I mean, you play with a certain partner for a long period of time. You know their characteristics. You know their voice, and guys have been doing a good job of feeding each other, playing off each other. But the one thing that's intriguing is stick position. You know, Chicago's got some dangerous forwards, and we know we're going to have good sticks, whether it's on the puck or in the lane, and just get the positioning. We haven't allowed them to get behind us too many times, which they're very deadly in, on the transition, so that's always good to keep the players in front of you. But defensively, they're really trying to shut those guys down.
Coming up in game four, you're going to have to deal with, obviously, an unbelievable crowd that's going to be at your back. You had a chance to put a team away. Managing emotions, how does a coaching staff go about doing that with the team?
Well, I think it's just got to keep the game simple. You don't have to do anything out of the ordinary. Just keep the game simple, gain zones, get it in their zone, try to establish our forecheck. That's where we're at our best, when we can have them in their zone. Make them defend. That takes some of their energy going offensively. So those are some of the things we'll look at, and just the details of the game. We have to be really smart with the puck, because they have a good transition game, and we're going to have to defend. There's going to be times in the game where our guys are going to have to defend well. They've done a good job of it, but we know they're going to have a big push, so we really have to be ready for that.
Do you ever sit around, especially after game one, where you win such an emotional game and it's late at night, it's overtime, and the crowd's still going crazy behind you, do you ever allow yourself to just kind of step back, take a breath, and enjoy the ride a little bit?
Well, I think it's not going to be, you don't enjoy the ride till the series is over, obviously, but you know, I'm just glad that we had a couple days in between that last game, because it went so late. To be able to turn it right around and get our energy right back would have been difficult. It was good to have a day off, come in here, you know, talk about the preparation, what we're going to try to do tomorrow, and get the guys re-energized and refocused.
I thought the most interesting part of that was that right there at the very end, when he basically said, I think the day off was critical for this team because of the late night and the energy levels. To get it all right back up again would have been difficult for us. That's what he said. I'm surprised by that. I think sometimes we as fans see momentum and we go, oh, you want momentum, you want momentum. Get him back out there as fast as possible. But very clearly, that game three took a lot out of this team. And to have that extra day, I think most of us thought it would be an advantage for Chicago. It sounds like it's going to be a big advantage for Nashville as well.
And that's what I think it changed my mind hearing him say that too, because then you also think about the other side of that. You know, I think that negativity sort of festers and grows. And so, you know, a day off where it's just in your mind that how you got here and you can't believe how you lost that game, I think that has the opportunity.
Self-doubt and questioning and all that stuff.
All of that stuff, like, it sort of piles on. And then you think about the other side. He's right. It was, as everybody knows, a very late night for Nashville. And it was a late night for the guys, for the team. So to have an extra day to sort of regroup and then get your rest and then come in the day after that and say, holy cow, look at where we are. Look at how we got here. This is amazing. I do think that it sort of just – It peaks, it rises through all of that. So just like we as a city got a day off to sort of breathe and catch our breath and get a little bit of sleep and now can come in tonight energized, I think it's fair to apply the same thing. And I think you're going to see it even from the fan base. I think that there'll be a different – what few red jerseys made it in last time, and there were very few. What few red jerseys make it in tonight, I don't think are going to have the same sort of swagger and joy that the ones that made it in on Monday night are going to have. I think the human nature element of this is it builds in each direction. So the day off, huge positive.
Yeah, and I was a little surprised by that. So I think that's really good news for this team, because again, I think this game is so much more important than I think the average fan probably feels deep down inside when they go, oh yeah, you got four chances to win one. You know, that you feel really great about that. You're 3-0. You should feel great about it. But I think it's really critical to not extend the series, not let it get back to Chicago. Don't give them any momentum. Don't let them off the mat. I think it's really critical to make a statement. I think it would be a statement for this franchise. I think winning 4-0 for the first time in NHL history, according to multiple reports, that this would be the first ever sweep by an 8 seed, essentially an 8 seed. I know it's not technically an 8 seed, but for all intents and purposes, this is a 1-8, and it's never happened before. I think it would be a big statement sort of nationally for this franchise, sort of an announcement that this franchise is a much bigger deal than just a nice, cute playoff story. This is a team that could win the Western Conference, and if they play the way they've played the last 3 games, winning, and again, that's sort of why I've asked Coach and Ryan those questions. They've won 3 different ways, and we've talked about it over the week. They've done it by holding on for dear life with great defense and goaltending. They've done it by, you know, unsung heroes with an offensive explosion, and they've come from behind and won in overtime. They've done it every possible way you can do it. I expect that same edge and attitude tonight from this team, because they know how important it is.
I love the thought of closing this thing out at home. I think that moment will never be forgotten between this team and these fans, so I love everything about that. I also love what a sweep does to the national discussion, because to your point, you sweep the Blackhawks and every NHL outlet is going to have to take note of it. Yep. The Blackhawks come back and you win this game in 6. The conversation, like it or not, that's how we always are. I'm always the like it or not guy. Preds come back, or the Blackhawks try and turn this into a 6-game series. The national conversation afterwards will be, you know, the Blackhawks were gritty, tried to come back, but the Preds managed to beat them. If the Preds win tonight, there is no reason for anybody to be able to turn it into anything other than, holy cow, it's time to be aware, because something special is happening in Nashville. Don't forget David Kaplan from CSN Chicago. He ticked all you guys off last week. Well, he's a good guy. He's coming back on at 8 o'clock. He'll be joining us at 8 o'clock. Also, next hour, 7:15, Trevor Bayne, NASCAR driver, going to come in or going to join us, and we'll get a little NASCAR conversation with Trevor Bayne and, you know, get into a little ball talk, I'm sure, with him. You know, whatever.
Hey, Bristol is awesome. Bristol is awesome.
And Braden is.
I know you're not a huge NASCAR guy.
No.
But Bristol, I would change your mind if we went to Bristol.
So
Betty would love Bristol. I mean, Betty lives for Bristol.
So we'll get back.
That is her jam.
We're going to get back into the press discussion in a minute. But when we come back, something's happening tonight in the NFL that really shouldn't be all that significant, but it is. The schedule release is coming out. We're going to get you set for it. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.